Happy Resurrection Day. This morning's reading is from the book of Ecclesiasticus, which is a Greek translation of the Septuagint. It means, ecclesia means assembly. So Ecclesiastes means teacher of the assembly. Chapter 4. Verse 1, the teacher says, "Again I looked and saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they have no comforter. Power was on the side of their oppressors, and they have no comforter."
Have you felt that way any time recently? Where you felt that there was such oppression in the news, in your health, relationship, work, where it just felt oppressive and you just longed to find something to ease the pain? We do lots of different things. We can exercise, which is a good thing. Get the blood flowing. Yesterday I was on a walk. It was a sunny day, and it was kind of nice knowing that, hey, it's getting warmer. The winter coat doesn't come out as often. That's a good thing. And walking, it's like, yeah, I've not done this too much recently, and it's good to be out. But as I was walking in the midst of the warm, sun-soaked day, I became sad. I wasn't sad at first, but as I was walking along and I was looking around my environment, and I would see these stones that had dates on them. Some of them were like 1967 with a dash to 1935. You know where I'm walking. It's normal walking around the cemetery, seeing things like that. That's the way the world is, right? That's just the way things go, right? But it got a little bit more discontent, a little more disturbed as I saw more and more plots of ground that were recently disturbed. And it seemed odd to me that in the cemetery in which I walked that there were so many. But as I walked, I began to feel the oppression, the pressure of this, what can easily be seen as a meaningless life of, we are studying Ecclesiastes, is chasing after the wind. When all there is under the sun is the things under the sun, then you look around and the stark reality hits you in the face. But that wasn't as hard as when I walked into a section where the years weren't 60 or 70 years, but I were seeing on the stones 16 years separating the date of start to the date of departure. 32 years. 11 years. And it just hits you deeply that this is not the way it's supposed to be, but this is the way it is, and it's oppressive. We try to get away from that reality as much as possible. We distract ourselves, and we want to comfort ourselves with these distractions. But the distraction only comforts for a while. But then I think all the people that are connected with these names, in the sorrow that they're feeling, and how are they comforting themselves? And then I look online and you see there are locations all over the world where people are wondering, where am I going to find comfort? It's been over 20 years ago where ISIS started its raising of havoc in the Middle East. And we saw all the things in the news that they were doing to people who didn't deserve the things done to them. And we wonder why. Where is God in all this? Where's the comfort? Recently, just in the past few days, there are insurgents in multiple countries. I looked at the list, the travel list for the U.S. Department, and it said that there were over 25 places that they suggest Americans do not travel to. And as I looked at why, it's because of all the things that are going in these countries that it's just not safe. We wonder why. Why all this oppression? Why can't people get along? Why can't they live in peace? Why does there always seem to be this angst in people to try to overthrow another so that they have power and then they can inflict their oppression on others? And we just wonder, why can't it just stop? Places like the Republic of Congo, one of my coworkers through the counseling that is over there, and it's terrible what's going on with people coming out of the jungles and the things that they're doing to innocent people who are just trying to live their life, they're just like you and me, that they just want to go to work, they just want to be able to earn some money, to have some food, to share their life with their family. And then there are other people who are bent on destroying that for their own gain. But then you don't have to look too far of people just fleeing that oppression, wouldn't you? I mean, if that was what was going on in your community, wouldn't you want to find another community? And we read in the news of all these people who are traveling from Central America to come to the United States because of the oppression that's going on there. If I was living there, I would want to too. And the things that they have to go through because of the oppression in our world. Where's the comfort? And just in this year, there have been over 25 tornadoes that are EF2s or more. People losing their homes in a blink of an eye. Where's the comfort? We can avert our eyes. We can bury ourselves in our work and all the things that bring us contentment. But when we raise our head, it's still there. Where's the comfort? Is there comfort? Asked the teacher. We're going through Ecclesiastes in the challenge that he says about our world, if there is no God under the sun and all there is that which is under the sun, he says it's kind of like vapor. He calls it meaningless. He calls it smoke. He calls it that thing that it's there and we can see it somewhat, but it's not tangible. We can't grab it and put it into something that we can utilize for our good, but it's still there. And he calls life vapor. And as I walk through the cemetery, it hits you. It's vapor. So the question is, well, so what do we do with this life that we've been given that we didn't ask for? How do we make meaning of it when many things in this life are meaningless and we grab after it and it doesn't satisfy? We enjoy it for a time, but it just doesn't stay around. What do we do with that? And what the writer of Ecclesiastes tells us is when there is no God beyond the sun, all we have to make meaning of this world is what's under the sun. And we find out it's smoke. It might be enjoyable, but we can't control what it does. So how do we find meaning in a world that's so often like smoke? He says, if there's nothing more than what's under the sun, then what's the point? There's just oppression. Or it's me running after things and burying myself in work and then not having time for other things to enjoy. But I come out going, yeah, I've accomplished these things, but what else do I have that when I die, what's to be given to someone else? And how do I know if they're going to be even wise to use what I've created for them? The teacher sits back, and when all he sees under the sun is that, it's pretty dreary. And he says, but there are some good things under the sun. He says, because of that reality, he says, enjoy your blessing. Be content with the little that you have. You can strive and you can work, but know what it comes to in the end. And that there are many things in this world that we run after that promise us things that never realize. He says they're just a chasing after the wind. He calls it pleasure and projects and justice and wealth and wisdom. He, in chapter 3, says, ultimately, when I look under the sun, the animals are no different than us, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. He says it's ultimately better for a handful of tranquility rather than two handfuls of toil. So we have to ask ourselves, what am I running after? What are those things that I put on my list that I say, if these things are in my life will be great? And how often on that list have you gotten those things, and it was nice to have those things for a while because they were new, but then all of a sudden they became common and they weren't as great as they were when they were new? And then we wonder, well, I just spent all the time, energy, and effort to take this, and it's not paying off. He'll go in thinking of life, the teacher does, and he says, you know, with all the toil, all the lack of comfort, all the oppression, aren't the dead better off than the living? Because that's their comfort. All that pain of an evil world, they're removed from now. And some people get to the point and think, yeah, that's the answer. That's the solution. But under the sun, that's really all that we've got. That's the only solution there is. And then he goes on to say, it's probably even better not to be born at all. And we could go, why was I born into this world that says it works, but doesn't? He says, think of community. A person can strive for all these things of personal accomplishment, he says, but the only thing that really matters is community. He says, two are better than one because you have a good return on your labor, so things can get done better. Then he says, on if either of them fall down, one can help the other up. Well, that's a good thing, but how many of us struggle with wanting anybody to come along and help me? We tend to be people who say, I don't need anybody's help. I'm a self-made person. But that's not what we're built for. That's not what we're designed for. That's not how God made us. He made us for community, to be people who care and who share life. That I give to you, you give to me, and I better your life, you better my life. But if I'm investing all my time to be away from you, then I can't do that for you. nor can you do that for me because I am separated from you. He says, we have to realize how we're made. We're made for community. Someone who's alone falls into a pit, who's going to help them up? He says, two lie down and they keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, can he defend themselves? A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. So I encourage you, and the teacher encourages us, find that community of people that you can share your life with and that you can be there to welcome their life into your life. Not that you're responsible for their life, but you're going to be responsible to their life, and where you can help and where they can help, you're going to open yourself up for that. Because walking on this earth all by ourselves is a lonely, meaningless journey. He'll tell the people, wisdom is better than folly. And folly is when we think the world works in a way it does not work. So for us to understand how the world works, we need to know the person who makes it. So finally in chapter 4, what he does, he brings us before the presence of God. He says, don't think that there's nothing beyond the sun. So all the way up to this point, he's been telling the people, everything under the sun is vapor. It's smoke. But then he says, but when you walk into the house of God, what? There's a God? Yes, there is a God. You mean with all this stuff going on, there's a God? Yes. Well, what kind of God is that? Because I want to have a conversation with that God. And he says, when you go into the house of God, be careful. Remember your place. God is in heaven, and you're on earth. God has a perspective that you don't have. And when things happen in our life that we wonder, why is this happening? God knows, we might not. We want to know so that we can avert and make sure it doesn't happen again, and maybe that's what God wants. He wants us to become wise, because maybe we were acting in a way that was foolish, and it was harmful to us and people that were close to us. Because he wants the best for us, because there is a God in heaven who loves us. Even though there is oppression on this earth, it's not there because of what he has done, it's because of what we have done. But so often we want to say, well, if God made it and created it, he is the author of it. You say, no, you got to realize. He gives us that free will to choose him or to resist him. And you go all the way back into the garden in the first sin. It was, no, I think I know better. And that fruit really looks good. And God is just keeping it from me. And I will be better off doing it my way. And God says, it's going to taste good for a moment, but it's going to bring so much turmoil and toil in your life. But if that's what you want, that's what a loving person does. If that's what you want, I'm not going to stop you. So God gives us that free will and that free choice, because it's in that free choice and in that free will that we return to somebody and want to join somebody, that it makes it so much more meaningful. Because when we are there and people love us for who we are, not because they're forced, it makes us feel better about who we are. And when we do that for others, it makes them feel better about who they are, because I'm wanting to spend the time that I have under the sun with you. Today I'm spending that time with you today. You've taken time out of your day to spend that time with me, to spend that time in community of God for God's sake. So we watch our words. If we say a vow, we fulfill a vow. We remember there is more in this world than what is under the sun. There's a God who cares about what goes on under the sun. He cares for us. He cares for us so much that he sent himself, his son. So oftentimes when we think of the areas of oppression that are in the world, are you willing to go there to bring comfort to the people who are in pain? Go and look some of these places up and see what these people are dealing with. It's overwhelming to me. But our tendency isn't to go running into those places. It's more like, man, I'm glad that's not going on here. But God, who created this world, didn't just sit back and say, you created it, you deal with it. He says, you created this system, but I'm going to come back into it for your sake. He came to his own. And isn't it sad that when God has a people that he comes to tell them, I've got hope for you, they say, I don't have the time. Have you ever had one of those experiences where you just wanted to spend a little time with someone that you just haven't seen for a while, but they just didn't have the time for you? What's that like? We understand that sense. It's a feeling of rejection, right? And here is God incarnate coming down in human form to the people that need him the most. And when we ask, is there any comfort? God says, yes. And Jesus arrives and he goes, I'm here. And humanity says, is there any other option? Because you don't fit what I think. And we think, he comes down and he tells us, you're going to mourn because the world's broken. But blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. He knows that under the sun, there's nothing that's really going to ultimately comfort. But he is here now. He says, if you're going to find any ultimate comfort, it's going to come through me now. Will you allow me to be that source of your comfort, that source of your hope? And even on the week before he died, he goes into Jerusalem and he's looking at it and people are cheering him, coming in. And there's a point in this whole series of events where he's looking over Jerusalem from afar and he says, oh, Jerusalem, you killed the prophets, you stoned those who sent you. How often I've longed to gather your children as a hen gathers its chicks under its wings, but you're not willing. The source of the comfort is there. He's come to us. But why would we run away? Well, oftentimes it's because we think he's got demands for us that we don't want to change. We don't want to not do that because we like that. And it might be God saying, well, that's okay, but you're overdoing that. You're turning that into the thing that you're pursuing rather than me. This is a blessing I give you. Cherish me. And when he's on the cross, totally abused and oppressed by the humanity that he's come to save, and they're saying, oh, you say you're this, come down from the cross, then we'll believe you. You healed others, heal yourself. They think that's reality, that's smoke. He's not what we think he should be. But he's everything they need him to be. Because he's on a cross where we should be. Because we've turned our back on God, we should be dying for our sin. But instead, he dies for our sin. And he looks at the people who have abused him to the point of his last breath. Looks at them from the cross. And instead of cursing them and saying, you're going to get what you're going to get, you just wait and see. The love of God says to humanity that's turned its back, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Man, I need that. Because there's so many times I think I know what I'm doing and I don't have a clue. Because I'm trying to find comfort in ways that don't ultimately comfort. But Jesus, with his arms outstretched, is saying, I am here. I can't imagine being one of the disciples who are thinking, he's the king, he's going to be sitting on the throne, and Jerusalem is going to be what it used to be again. They just killed him. Now what? Where's my comfort? They go and they hide behind closed doors thinking they're next. Until 3 days later, when the life of Jesus was gone, and the Father breathes like he did into that dirt that first day that he creates humanity, breathing into the dirt and it animates and has life. That this thing that should be going back to the dust now is being reanimated by the Father again. And he breathes life into the lifeless body. He breathes life into our lifeless body. He gives hope to the hopeless because he rolls the stone away and Jesus comes marching out of the tomb with the angels rejoicing and the world wondering, who is this guy? Who is this God who would do it this way? If it were me, I would do it any other way than this. It doesn't make sense. It's confusing. Why couldn't he just do it a different way? But remember, you're on earth and God is in heaven. There's a reason he did it the way he did it. And aren't you glad, in spite of the way he did it, that he did it for you? Because now what Jesus can say is, death, where is your victory? The disciples are still wondering. They're saying, our Savior's dead. He's out of the tomb and saying, no victory there, folks. Where is your sting, O death? Well, there is only a sting under the sun. But I know that there is a God in heaven who will take that sting and give me a salve, who will heal me. And that's what Jesus' death on the cross does for me. The sting of death is sin. The power of sin is the law. But thanks be to God that he gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. He's not saying, I give you victory from all of your hopes, your dreams, and what you're trying to accomplish. He says, in spite of all that, I give you hope through me, dying for you. And when they hurled their insults, he didn't retaliate. He suffered. He made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to the one who judges justly. He himself bore our sin in his body on the cross so that we might die to sin and live for righteousness. So this whole concept is God is going to make a way for us to make our way back into Eden. That in the midst of this time, we can know that as we walk out these doors as his children, he says, you are loved, you are special, go live like it. Don't remember what Satan is telling you about how bad you are and the things you messed up, because those have all been paid for. You are clean, you are whole. Go out and enjoy the blessing that I have in this world under the sun, but don't worship the world under the sun. Worship me. We remember that it is by his wounds we are healed. For we were like sheep going astray, but now you have returned to the shepherd and overseer of your soul. Do you see how he brings back community? We were walking all alone. He says, now I brought you back into my community. With me as your shepherd, who will feed you, care for you, heal you, nurture you. And because of this, he tells his disciples, after he's risen from the dead, he says, go and make disciples of all nations. Make followers of me. Why? Why should we do that? Because I'm their only hope. Baptize them into the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teach them to obey everything that I've commanded you. Why would we want to do that? Because I know how I made you. And if you live the way I made you, it's going to be good for you. And I want your life to be good. And when you get to that point, at the end of this temporal life, because you trust in me, you can trust I will do for you what I did for my son and breathe life into you, and the sting of death will no longer exist. Because of what Jesus has done for us, we can have hope in this world that at many times seems like smoke, nothing that really lasts, but he lasts. And when we align ourselves with him, we can know that who he created us to be, in spite of whether anybody else sees it, is like a precious gem that he will give anything to possess. because he gave his one and only son to possess you. If you need the prayers of the church, if you're struggling with the meaninglessness of life, you're in the right place. Because it's when we look beyond the sun to the sun is where hope exists. Let's stand and give God praise.